We are continuing in the fifth chapter of Judges. We're in the midst of this Song of Deborah, and last time we'd gotten through the fifth verse. And now, beginning with the sixth verse, this Song of Deborah is going to describe the condition the land had gotten into as a result of their oppressors. And of course, each time this happened, and the people did repent and cry to God, then God would raise up a judge to deliver them. So verse 6, in the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied, and the travelers walked through byways. So this song goes back to the days of Shamgar, who was the judge previous to Deborah. And Shamgar had done some great things to deliver the people. And it also extends into the days of Jael, who is the wife of Heber, and she figured quite prominently now in the overthrow of Jabin, which we've already had the story of. Well, in those days, notice the condition the land was in. Notice how the oppressors had so taken over and had so changed the lives of the people till they could not live a normal life. The highways were unoccupied, and the travelers walked through byways. Now, in normal times, when there are thieves and robbers and bandits that are around, they walk on the byways. They take the back paths. They lurk in the shadows. They stay in the dark, ready to pounce upon their victims. But crime had become so blatant in this day that the highways were unoccupied. The travelers had to stay off the highways, and they had to walk through the byways. They were the ones who stayed in the dark and lurked in the shadows and had to pick a secret path to get through, whereas the robbers and the oppressors stayed on the highways. The highways were filled with the unwanted, undesirable type people. And so you see what a sad condition the country was in. Ordinary trade and commerce would be brought to a halt here. There's no way that the nation could function as it should function. There's no way that the traders and the buyers and sellers of goods could continue their normal occupation. And you couldn't even travel from one village to another without being in danger, then of being robbed or of losing your life. And then the next thing that's noted in verse 7, the inhabitants of the villages ceased. They ceased in Israel. Now, the inhabitants of the village would be the little outlying towns away from a large city. And these were really the farmers. Back in this day and time, and continuing for many centuries after this even, the farmers lived in villages, and they left their villages to go out into the fields to till the fields. The fact of a farmer living out on the farm in a lone house away from any of his neighbors has only occurred over the past 150 years or so after the Industrial Revolution. And ancient times, the farmers lived together in villages and then went from their homes out into the fields to work. Well, the inhabitants of the villages ceased. That is, they ceased their work so that the tilling of the fields had just about come to a standstill. And, of course, this would stop the crop production. It would greatly affect the welfare of the nation when the crops were not being produced, when the food was not being raised. And so you can see what a cloud then was over this nation, economically as well as spiritually, as a result of their leaving God and the other nations then being allowed to move in. This Jabin of the king of the Canaanites was certainly being oppressive. So they ceased in Israel, until that I, Deborah, arose, that I arose a mother in Israel. So Deborah was raised up as a prophetess and as a judge. God had a plan that Deborah was to know about, whereby Israel would rise up and take arms and defeat this invading force, this oppressive force that was headed by Jabin, the king of Canaan, and his top general, Sisera. The statement is made that I arose a mother in Israel. Deborah was like a mother to the people. Just as a male leader could be like a father, Deborah was like a mother. And as we know, in any family situation, the mother is every bit as important as the father. The mother image, the mother figure, is necessary. And so since Deborah was a female, she's referred to here as a mother in Israel. And all the ramifications that apply to a mother tending to her children would apply to Deborah then attending to the inhabitants of Israel. Then in verse 8, she in just one little short phrase states what the main problem was that brought on all this calamity, why the king of Canaan was allowed to have all the power, why this people were sold out to their enemies by God. This is said very plainly here. They chose new gods. That's the problem. They chose new gods. Here was a nation that was the worshiper and the follower of the Ancient of Days, the one true and living God, the only God, and yet in spite of all of the things he'd done for them, in spite of the fact that they had a chance to be his people, they chose new gods. Now, this is a very despicable thing to God. It is a thing that arouses his jealousy and anger and wrath, and consequently, the people were feeling this jealousy of God because they chose new gods. The lowest act that a person can do spiritually is an act of choosing a new God once he has known the true and living God. And any time we allow something to come into our lives of a religious nature that we did not get from God, that's not a part of God, that cannot be God, then we have done this very same thing. We have chosen new gods or a new God. And this is a very, very disquieting and unpleasant thing to the true and living God when we let this happen. But yet, here is their sin in a nutshell. They chose new gods. And then the song proceeds to further show the problems that were associated with this, the condition the nation was in as a result of their being oppressed by Jabin. And, of course, they were oppressed because they had chosen new gods. Then was war in the gates. Now, the gates were the places where judgment was given, where the judges sat in their judgment. It's the place where the government was run in each city. And so when a person appeared before the judges in the gates, and we're not necessarily talking about the great judge that God would raise up like Deborah, but we're talking about the smaller lower courts that were held in the various tribes and cities and villages. Then if you had a problem, you went to the gates there and presented it. But now there was war in the gates, so that the judging system of the country had come to a halt. The functioning of the governments no longer could be carrying on as they should be. And another result is, was there a shield or spear seen among 40,000 in Israel? There was no will on the part of the people to fight against their oppressors. There was no resistance, actually. There was no shield or spear seen among 40,000 in Israel. They might have had shields and spears. No doubt they did. But they were hidden. They were put away. They were laying up rusting rather than being used. And this was another sign then of the lethargy or the complete defeat of this people. There was just no way that they were even going to raise one voice of outcry against their oppression. They weren't prepared to back up anything they might say, any threat they might make, any demand that they might give to Jabin. And so verse 9 says, "My heart is toward the governors of Israel." Now, along with Deborah, there seemed to have been others that were assisting in the government. Maybe she appointed them to assist in governing various areas of the nation. And these were no doubt diligent people. They were trying to turn the thing around. They were trying to get the people to go back to God. They were willing to meet and fight the oppressor themselves. And so she says, "My heart is toward the governors of Israel. I have a feeling for them. I have a sympathy with them. I understand their predicament. I understand their position. I understand their willingness to try here to bring about some kind of change." And she further describes these governors by saying that offered themselves willingly among the people. It seemed that these governors were one of the first and most willing to volunteer to enter into this army of Barak, this army of 10,000 volunteers that he called for from these two tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali, as well as some of the other tribes. And so she describes them here as being those that offered themselves willingly among the people. Now, these governors might have been, able to have declared themselves exempt from military service, that their office was too high and their position was too important for them to have to go out into the field and actually pick up a weapon and enter into physical conflict. But they didn't do that. They offered themselves willingly among the people, which shows that in the area of the work of God, there is none too high to do the lowest of works. And also, it seems that no person is so low that he cannot also involve himself in high works. But we must be willing to do anything in the work of God that we would ask somebody else to do. If we are willing to ask somebody else to do it, if we think that it may be their place to do, then we should also be just as willing ourselves to roll up our sleeves and go to work. And these governors here offered themselves willingly among the people. They didn't do it grudgingly. They didn't do it because they felt like they just had to set an example and they hated the job. They did it willingly among the people. And then she concludes that verse by saying, "Bless ye the Lord." Now that's the crowning theme of this whole song, is that the Lord is to be blessed. The Lord is to be given the honor and the glory and the recognition for having brought about this victory, this change, this improvement in the state of the people. So verse 10, "Speak, ye that ride on white asses, ye that sit in judgment and walk by the way." Now, those that sit on white asses would refer to the higher, upper class of people. They didn't have horses in that day and time in Israel, but they did have the asses. And the white asses were more rare than the others, and consequently they had a greater value upon them. So the higher class people, those that had more wealth and demanded more dignity, would be riding on the white asses. And now that the highways had been made safe, now that they could travel along the highways instead of having to go in the byways or remain hidden, they were to speak. They were to give blessings to God. They were to recognize from whence these blessings came and to speak up about it. Not just know about it, but make it known. To use their mouth as a means of speaking forth. And certainly this song that is being composed here in this, and we're reading about it in this fifth chapter, this song was one of the vehicles that was used in order to be able to praise God, to know what to say, to know what had happened, to know why praise was being given Him. And so, "Speak, ye that ride on white asses." And the second group is, "Ye that sit in judgment." This would be the fact now that the judges were allowed to go back to the gates. They were allowed to go back and sit in judgment, and to carry on their duties, and to render a service to the people, those who needed the services of the judges. No longer now was there war in the gates, but those that sat in judgment could go back and continue their duties there. And walk by the way. Now this would be the common everyday person that would use the highways. They're now able to walk on the highways. They're now able to safely travel from one place to another. They're now able to be free of this fear of oppression and danger and being robbed and maybe killed as they walk out on the open road. They can walk in the highway now. These classes of people are to speak. They're to give praise to God. They're to bless the Lord. They're to recognize what the Lord's done for him. Now, this principle of praising God and giving thanks to God is one that certainly does exist today. God expects us to recognize that He is the giver of all the good things. He expects us to praise Him, to thank Him, to give Him the honor and the glory for it. He expects us to use these blessings according to His will and to recognize that He's given them to us for a purpose, and not just to take every blessing and go on as though it's something that we'd earned and deserved and forget about God. He expects us to return a thanksgiving to Him, just as they're told to do in this Song of Deborah. Now verse 11 further dwells on this same point. They that are delivered from the noise of archers in the places of drawing water, there shall they rehearse the righteous acts of the Lord, even the righteous acts toward the inhabitants of His villages in Israel. So, those that would go out to the places of drawing water, to the wells, ordinarily, while they were under this oppression of the Canaanite army, there they would have the noise of archers. There they would have the great fear of being involved in some kind of a conflict with the soldiers. Maybe the soldiers were using the wells as a place to practice their shooting of their arrows. It was the noise of archers. Maybe they used these wells as a place where they just hung out to kill time and to tell funny stories to each other and the general things that soldiers will do when they have time on their hands. Making it a place dangerous for the average citizen to go to, an undesirable place to be in, an uncomfortable situation to go there to draw water. Now they could draw water. They were in a place that where they were delivered from the noise of archers. The soldiers no longer would be hanging around these places. These places would now be safe for you to go and carry out your everyday needed activities of drawing water. So, what about it? Those that are delivered from the noise of archers in the place of drawing water, there shall they rehearse the righteous acts of the Lord. That's a good time to talk about what the Lord's done. While you're drawing water, while you're at the well side, there you can rehearse, there you can recount, there you can relive the righteous acts of the Lord. And we'd like to point out now that the things that God did here in bringing about this release of Israel and bringing about the overthrow of Jabin and Sisera and their army, this was a righteous thing. This was something that God did as a result of His judgment upon these people. And it wasn't anything that God had need to be ashamed of or anything that God should feel badly about or anything that God had to compromise in order to be able to do. It was a righteous thing with God to do this. And so we have to continually look upon the things that God has done as being a righteous thing. Now, it doesn't mean that we can go out and take our own mind and do the similar thing ourselves to somebody else and it be righteous. It has to be something done by God, something that is led by and inspired by God to do. And so this was a righteous act, the righteous act of the Lord. And it was just simply God now taking judgment against the Canaanites for the way they had oppressed His people. Even though He was willing to let His people be oppressed, the Canaanites had done wrong in treating them this way. So it was a righteous act of God to bring about their overthrow. And this is further described, even the righteous acts toward the inhabitants of His villages in Israel. Now the ones who seemed to benefit the most from this were the ones who lived out in the villages, because they were the ones who were most oppressed by the army. They had the least amount of protection. They were not living in walled cities. They were not living in a group of a lot of people that could offer protection. But they were the ones that could be singled out and given the most oppression, who had the most to fear, the most to lose, the living out in the villages of Israel. And so the righteous acts then that God did in overthrowing the Canaanite army were righteous acts toward the inhabitants of His villages. And so they also were to recognize what God had done for them. They were to give Him praise. They were to give Him the honor and the glory. They were to bless the Lord. And they were to recount these deeds that God had done. They were to rehearse them. They were to tell others about them. They were to memorize them themselves. They were to know them very plainly so that they then would not forget what God had done. And then the last phrase of verse 11, then shall the people of the Lord go down to the gates. Now it would be safe to go back to the gates. Go back where the seat of government was for each little village and each city. go back to the place where the judges could sit in judgment, and the affairs of men that were in conflict could now be straightened out by the ones who had been placed in authority to pass judgment. Those that would have some kind of a grievance, those that would have a true reason to seek justice themselves. They'd been done wrong by somebody else, or they felt that they'd had wrong done to them. They felt that they'd been mistreated some way. Now they had a place they could go and get this straightened out. And those who had been falsely accused could bring their case there before the judges and have themselves exonerated if they were not guilty of the things that they'd been accused of. A very vital function in the lives of the people was this function of the judges at the gates and the function of the government of the various cities. And so now they could go and get this straightened out. These judges were righteous Israelites, and the people could feel free to take their problems to them. And we in the church today have a reference similar in 1 Corinthians 6, beginning with the first verse. Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unjust and not before the saints? Do you not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Know you not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? If then you have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. I speak to your shame. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren. But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. So the privilege of having our problems judged before righteous people is certainly a great and honorable thing that we should cherish. And that had been restored to this people by the overthrow of the Canaanite army by Deborah and Barak. Well, we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.